We began the first, or did the first of a couple of lessons on the subject of fearing other people, being afraid of other people. And that may sound like an unusual topic for a sermon, but we saw that the Bible addresses fearing other people, being afraid of other people, all the way from the beginning in the writings of Moses to the end in the writings of John, over and over addressing the fear of man. Now, for most of us, that doesn't mean, as we saw last week, fear of physical harm. Most of us are not afraid that another human being is going to cause us physical harm. Now, I just want to take a moment and suggest to you that you not take that for granted. Most of us have lived our entire lives without having any real fear of physical harm from another human being. But do you realize that out of every four people in the world, one out of every four lives in a conflict or war zone? One out of every four people lives in an area where they have to worry day to day about warplanes and machine guns and bombs and kidnappings, genocide and those sorts of things. Here in America, four out of every 10 children every year will be the victim of two or more violent incidents. Four out of 10 American children will be the victim of a violent incident twice in a year. 1 million U.S. adults every year are the victim of a violent crime. So it's not something that we should take for granted. Even though most of us have never really had to worry about it, it's something to be grateful for. That we don't have to worry about car bombs, we don't have to try to go to sleep, the sound of gunfire in the streets, and the safety and welfare of our families. But the fact is that most of us don't have to worry about that. But it's also a fact that we do sometimes have fear of other people. And what we saw was that there are three reasons for that. Number one, other people often have the ability to hurt us materially. There are people who are able to cause us material or financial loss and all that comes with that. And so we can be afraid of dealing a certain way with a boss or some other person that has the power to hurt us financially. Or maybe we fear going to kind of a deeper level. We fear the emotional power that someone has over us. Someone has the power to hurt our feelings or to do us emotional damage. Or maybe we fear going to the deepest possible level, the loss or the lessening at least of a relationship, that people will turn on us or not love us the way that we would like for them to. And so there's a very real sense in which all of us must deal in one way or another with fear of people. Now, again, fearing people, most of us, doesn't mean fearing physical harm. However, fear is a very physical emotion, isn't it? Fear is a very physical emotion. For me, when I get scared, I always feel it the same way. There's never a time when I was about to coach a game in any sport at any level that I did not feel a pressure and a tightness and a pain right in the middle of my abdomen, right behind my sternum. I felt that because I was afraid. I was afraid that I would not have the answer, the right play, or be able to handle some challenge that came up, or be able to deal with something. I always, anytime I was coaching a game, felt that. That's where I feel it. Right? People feel it in different ways. Sometimes people get dizzy. Sometimes people get nauseated. Sometimes people start to sweat. Sometimes there are other things. Maybe your heart beats faster. You start to shake. Because fear is a very physical thing. We feel it in a very physical way. And because of that, when God deals with fear in the Bible, very often He pictures it in a physical way. In our verse, Proverbs chapter 29, and in verse 25, here in our verse, He pictures fear of man as a snare or as a trap. So I want to think about that for just a little bit. Fearing other people is like a trap or a snare. Now think about animals. In my mind, there are two reasons why an animal would be trapped or ensnared. Now, what would they be? Why would someone trap or ensnare an animal? Well, one reason that someone would trap or ensnare an animal is to keep it trapped or ensnared, or to keep it in a cage. So fear of man can often be a cage that we live in. Now think about this poor lion, trapped in this cage, this little tiny cage. Is that what he was designed for? Is that what God made that lion for, to live trapped in a cage? Wasn't that lion made to roam the tundra and roar fiercely and hunt down animals? Was he created to live in a cage and fed dead meat every now and then? Be looked at by people passing by? That's not why he was created. And yet sometimes animals can become entrapped that way. And that's exactly what fear does. But that is not God's design. In Galatians 6 and verse 1, now here he's talking about the slavery to the law. But what he says is true about anything. It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, do not be subject again to a yoke of slavery. God did not create you to be a slave to fear, to be trapped. If I do this, what will my boss say? If I say this, what will my coworkers say? If I express myself honestly, what will my friends think? If I talk about something that is important to me, how will my spouse react? What will my children say? If I've got a problem and I'd like to express it, how will the church react? So what God created us. He created us and He saved us for freedom. Paul said that God has not given us a spirit of timidity. What does it mean to be timid? And there's a reason that Paul is saying this to Timothy. Why? Because he was often timid. He was scared that if I do the right thing, people are going to react the wrong way. God has not given us a spirit of timidity. I better stay small, be small, talk quietly, take up a little bit amount of space, live so that people don't notice me because I'm scared. So what God did, He has given us, He says, a spirit of power. The proverb writer said that the righteous are as bold as a lion. And not this poor guy, not this guy caged up, but a lion who lives in his power. But make no mistake, fear of other people will entrap you and keep you from living the life that you can and should live. What's another reason that animals are sometimes ensnared or trapped? Sometimes it's not to keep them caged. Sometimes it's to kill them. Sometimes animals are ensnared or trapped in order to kill them. Make no mistake, if you live fearing other people, the result is spiritual death. Turn over to Matthew chapter 10 and notice a conversation that Jesus had with his disciples about a limited commission. Jesus is sending out the 12 to go preach. This is not the great commission. This is what we call a limited commission. They're going to preach the gospel to a limited number of people in a limited geographical area. And he's going to tell them up front, you've got a lot to be afraid of if you are the kind who tends to fear of other people. He says, you know, you got the basic run-of-the-mill verse 14, people might reject you. People might not want the message you have, and they might tell you to go away. But, he says, it actually could be much worse than that. Notice verse 17 of Matthew 10. Beware of men, for they will hand you over to the courts and scourge you in the synagogues. You will be brought before governors and kings for my sake. Look at verse 21. It gets worse. Brother will betray brother to death. A father his child. Children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. You'll be hated by all because of my name. And then in verse 34, do not think that I came to bring peace on the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. I came to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's enemies will be the member of his own household. If you are inclined to fear people, being a Christian is a dangerous thing. There is a lot to fear. You know what Jesus says repeatedly as he thinks about this idea of the fear of man? You know what he says three times? Three times in this passage he says, do not fear. So wait a minute. They're going to reject me. Wait a minute. They're going to hand me over to the court. They're going to have me. They're going to beat me. They're going to threaten to kill me. And if that weren't enough, my own family is going to turn against me. Wait a minute. What do you mean don't fear? It's awfully easy for you to say. I want you to think about that. Did Jesus ever face anything that he talks about in this passage? Did Jesus ever face anything that he talks about in this passage? Did Jesus ever face rejection? Was he ever scourged? Was he ever rejected by his own family? Did he face death? You know, the Bible even says in Isaiah chapter 53 that Jesus was smitten of God. That the Lord was pleased. The Lord was pleased to crush him, putting him to grief. On the cross, he cried out, my God, what? Why have you forsaken me? Don't ever think when Jesus is talking about hardship and he says, do not fear, that this is easy for him to say. He faced all of the things that we're talking about and says, do not fear. And here's the reason. The reason that we must avoid fear of other people is because it leads to spiritual death. Jesus will say in this passage, he who loves father, mother, son, or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. In other words, if you fear your family to the point that you will not obey me, we cannot have a relationship. If it is more important to you to stay on the right side of family than to be on the right side of me, you cannot have a relationship with me. Jesus said, he who does not take his cross and follow after me. When a person took up their cross in the ancient world, where were they going? They were going to die. And it's facing death that Jesus says, do not fear, or we cannot have a relationship together. He who has found his life will what? Jesus said, if you've got a life in mind that you want to live, if you've got a life that you want to create, and creating and maintaining that life is the most important thing to you, then you've lost spiritual life. And then he just says it bluntly, whoever denies me before men. Now, why would someone do that? Right, would you do that in here? Would you deny Jesus? If we're in this building among other Christians, are you ever tempted to deny Jesus? When would that happen? When we're afraid of the consequences. And Jesus said, if you deny me before men, I will deny you before my Father. What's the significance of that? Well, Jesus is the friend that we have in the presence of the Father. And if he denies us, we cannot be saved. And so the writer says that the fear of man brings a snare. But what delivers from that, he says, is trust in the Lord. And when a person trusts the Lord, he says that that person will be exalted. Now, I want to notice that word exalted for a moment, because it doesn't mean what you think it means. The word exalted, when we think about it in a context like this, we would think that it means lifted up, honored, and privileged in that sort of. That's not what he means here. What he means here is lifted up and put in a safe place. Years ago, I spent a summer traveling around to two different carnival groups and having church services and Bible studies with them. It was, to say the least, an interesting time. And so there were two different groups who had come into our area, and I would travel once a week or twice a week to travel to these different groups to have Bible studies and to have church with them. And I got to be really good friends with one of the young men. His nickname was Shorty. I assume his parents didn't do that to him. But his nickname was Shorty, and he had a girlfriend named Carrie. We got to be close, and they came and stayed with us one time, and we used to talk on the phone. And one day he called me up and said, "Hey, I want you to do my wedding. I want you to come to Tennessee and do my wedding." I said, "Great." So we drove down there, got down to their little home down there, got out, went out in the yard. The kids were little. Isaiah wasn't even around back then, but Jack and Rihanna were little. Jack was walking. Rihanna was still crawling. So we got there, got out of the car, put Jack down to go talk to the people, and this little bitty feist dog, you know what a feist dog is, right? Like little yip dog, little dog like that, comes flying out of nowhere. Well, Jack is standing on the ground, and this dog comes after Jack. And Jack started running in circles, head back, arms flailing, screaming at the top of his lungs, "Pick me up! Pick me up!" And the dog jumped right behind him, chasing him in a circle, round, 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 round. Well, I picked him up. He was fine. Went on, did our thing. Next day, we were in their living room. And Rhiannon was crawling around the floor. Here comes a little feist dog again. This time, though, he wasn't chasing him. He was just standing there, very calmly standing there. Rhiannon was crawling around the floor. She's crawling. She stopped right in front of the dog. She looked up, realized what she was facing, and absolutely screamed at the top of her lungs. So what did I do? I picked her up, right? In both of those cases, my children are, or could be, appear to be, they think they are, in a great deal of danger. So what did I do? I picked them up and lifted them out of the danger to a higher place. That's the imagery that the writer is using here. Isaiah wasn't in that story, but I've got him coming in just a minute, so hang on for a second. Psalm 118. Notice again how the writer puts this idea of the fear of man and God's deliverance from it in physical terms. Psalm 118. Notice that it says in Psalm 118, in verse 6, that David, verses 6 and 7, David is in a danger situation where he is threatened by other people. And it says that, even though that is the case, look at verse 6, the Lord is with me. So what? I will not fear. Even though he says, and I want you to notice this word, commonly used in the Bible, both Old and New Testament, to give the same picture. Notice the word in verse 5. He says, from my what? From my distress. I want you to notice that word. It's used in both Testaments in this way. And the word distress means a problem that is binding, constricting, and claustrophobia causing. It's the idea of being so wrapped up and squeezed so tightly that you cannot breathe. Have you ever been in a situation where you were so scared of something, your breath was short? You couldn't get your breath. You felt like you were being squeezed and constricted. You felt a pressure on your chest. That's the word that he uses here. So, Isaiah was younger. He was 7 or 8, maybe. I don't remember exactly. He was around that age. And we'd been out somewhere as a family. We got home. We pulled in the driveway. Everybody's unclicking their seatbelts and getting out. Everybody unclicks, starts to get out of the car. Isaiah says, "I can't get out." I thought, well, that's odd. He says, "What do you mean you can't get out?" "I can't get out." So I get out of the van, and I go to the back and look, And Isaiah, and I, to this day, I don't know how he did it. Isaiah was buckled into the seatbelt, but somehow had gotten it loose and wrapped it so tightly around himself that it wouldn't, you know how a seatbelt, like, it locks and you can't pull it out? And for some reason, it wouldn't unbuckle either. And he really could not get out. And there he sat, completely wrapped up and constricted in this seatbelt. Well, that's what fear does. That's what fear does. Fear can wrap us up so tightly and constrict us so badly that we can't handle it. It's hard to breathe. We feel claustrophobic because of the fear that we're feeling. Isaiah could not get out. I could not get the belt loose. I couldn't unbuckle it. Had to go in the house and get a knife and cut him out of the seatbelt. I had to release him from that. And that's what David is saying about this situation. Notice what he says in verse 5. And knowing what you know now about distress, notice how David puts it. From my distress, I called upon the Lord. The Lord answered me and did what? Set me in a what? A large place. Feel what David is saying. I was so wrapped up in fear, I was constricted and it was tight and I was claustrophobic in it. But what did God do? God released it and put me in a wide open space. Now I can breathe again. And that's the way that God talks about deliverance from fear. So how does all of this work? Well, there's three things briefly I want you to notice and then we'll be done. Trusting in the Lord, he says, is what delivers from fear. Now, sometimes that means that God might end the suffering. Sometimes it means that God sees that you're afraid and he's going to take you out of that. But he almost never does. He might. You can ask and you can see if he will, but God typically doesn't remove you from difficult situations, does he? In fact, he almost never does. And it's not because he doesn't care. It's not because that he's incompetent. But notice, we won't turn and look at it, but I would encourage you to look at it carefully. 2 Corinthians 1, 8 and 9. Paul says that we were in such a serious condition in 2 Corinthians 1, 8 and 9 that we despaired even of life. Why? So that we would not trust in ourselves, but in God. Why does God often leave you in a situation you would dearly love to be out of? Because there's something it will teach you that you need to know. There's some growth it will create that you need to have. When Jack was being chased by the dog, I picked him up. When Rhiannon was terrified facing the dog, I picked her up. When Isaiah was caught in the seatbelt, I cut him out, but not immediately. I let him sit in it for a little while so that he would learn to leave the seatbelt alone, right? Because there was something that he needed to learn, and God often does the same thing for us. But even if God leaves us in it, two things to notice. God's resources can truly help us. Even when God leaves us in a situation that causes fear or stress, God's resources will be a help to us. He says an interesting thing in Isaiah 51, 12 and 13. He says, "Why do you fear man who dies like grass and do not trust the Lord?" But the word that he uses for Lord is not the word for master. It is the word that we normally translate Yahweh or Jehovah, which means what? The eternal one. God says, why do you fear someone who is only temporary instead of trusting the one who is eternal? But then going back to Matthew 10 and finishing up with Matthew 10, Jesus says no human can truly hurt you. He makes an interesting statement. Do not fear those who are only able to kill the body. Only Jesus could make a statement like that. Do not fear those who can only kill the body. I don't know about you, but having my body killed is a big deal. That's something I would rather avoid if I can. Only Jesus would say, do not fear those who are only able to kill the body. But rather, he said, fear the one who is able to destroy both body and soul in hell. So trying to get past the extreme nature of it and see what Jesus is saying. The very worst that anybody can do to you is to take your physical life. That's a big deal, but it's not the biggest deal. That's a limited punishment with limited consequences. God is able to inflict consequences that are eternal. There is no human being in the world, not one, who can do you any ultimate damage. There's really not one person in the entire world who can do you any unlimited eternal damage. Only God can do that. And so, it is God that we need to trust whenever we are afraid. Take out your song book and turn to the invitation song, and we'll sing that in just a moment. It's a great song for this occasion, for a moment like this. When we are giving you an opportunity to make a resolution. Resolutions are not just something for New Year's or Mondays, first of the month. But for any time that a resolution needs to be made. And so this is a moment where we're giving all of us an opportunity to make a resolution, to resolve to do something that needs to be done. If you are not a Christian, this is your moment to resolve to either find out what you need to know or to be immersed into Christ for the forgiveness of your sin. This is the most important moment to make that resolution for one reason. It's the only moment that you know that you have. If you are a Christian and there's some way that we can help you to make a resolution or to carry through with it, we'd love to do that. We are here to help you in any way that we can. We'd love to talk with you privately after church, or you can come forward, take a seat on the front as we stand and sing.